Wake up, Coastal Carolina. Wake up. This is your CCTA Wake Up Call.
Produced by the Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization dedicated to the preservation of the U.S. Constitution, free enterprise, and individual liberty.
Hello, Coastal Carolina, and welcome to CCTA Wake Up Call. I'm your host, Rick Hopkins. Good to be with you again. Today we're going to have a little bit different show. We've got two special guests that aren't with us, but they were with us on July 20th at our public meeting. We hold the third Tuesday of every month, and these were our guest speakers. We had Colonel Walter Joseph Marm and Dexter Liu. Now, Dexter Liu's parents escaped Shanghai just ahead of the communist takeover of China, and most of Liu's extended family suffered very brutal attacks under the hands of Mao Zedong. And Dexter is going to share his story with us on how his parents escaped communist China and what that type of life was like. Then we're going to hear from Walter Joseph Marm, U.S. Army Colonel retired, who received the Congressional Medal of Honor for gallantry beyond the call of duty for battlefield action as a first lieutenant in Vietnam. First of all, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsor.
Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out RightWingGranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to RightWingGranny.com.
The God and Country Christian Alliance has a simple mission, but it is a profound one. They want to inform and educate the public on issues of moral and political concern. They want to restore the Judeo-Christian values upon which this nation was founded to all levels of government. And they want to encourage and activate pro-family voters. Simple, but not easy. The God and Country Christian Alliance meets the third Monday of every month at Moore's Barbecue on MLK in New Bern. Meetings begin promptly at 7 p.m. and end by 8:30. To enjoy dinner with the group before the meeting, arrive between 6 and 6:30. Both the food and the company are good. Meetings include speakers and discussion, and their annual banquets are legendary. Join them on the third Monday of each month for a refreshingly candid view of the world and our place in it.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. Well, as I promised, we're going to hear from Dexter Liu, and here is our own Pete Benton introducing Dexter.
Ladies and gentlemen, please give a nice applause for Dexter Liu.
Thank you. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much. I'm honored, really, to be here, and especially among such esteemed guests and fellow patriots. Thank you very much. I prepared a transcript, and I will read from my transcript, but before I do, what Pete just spent time explaining is so profound. I mean, I know most of us here in this room share many of the sentiments. But I want you to be thinking about what Pete said as I read you my transcript, because the contrast could not be more harsh. And history does a cruel way of repeating itself. And the story I want to tell you is a story that was very personal, obviously, affected our families and many folks from across the pond, not on the European side, but across the Pacific, and still does, by the way. So, I'm a naturalized American, and that makes me a very lucky man, because I've lived the American dream. And I thank my parents, because they gave us the opportunity to live a life in the freest nation on the planet, the United States of America. And having lived on four continents, I can tell you unequivocally, That is still true even today. My mother and father escaped communist China, or actually China at the time, before it became communist, just before the communists took over in October 1949. My parents made enormous sacrifices in doing so, because what they left behind were their loved ones, their families, friends, everything they knew, to take refuge on Taiwan, and for which we, who escaped with them, were eternally grateful, of course. At the time, so many people in China, I have to say this, my dad is the youngest of 13, very big family. China, agrarian society, it was very common to have a very large family. So he was the youngest of 13. He did not farm, he went off to the Navy. He never saw any member of his family ever again before he died in 1995. And I think that illustrates the enormous sacrifice so many made after the fall of China to the communists. My mother, on her side, now she came from a wealthy Shanghai family. She too left family behind. They took her family home. The family she left behind, they sent off to communes. And she was able to reunite with her two brothers after a 50-year, half a century separation, only one time. And the only trip she made back to Shanghai, it was incredibly bittersweet, and you can only imagine how emotional it must have been. In May of 1966, Mao Zedong launched the Cultural Revolution. You know your history. He sent his Red Guards to purge the entire country. Now, the Red Guards, if you don't know this already, were the Chinese version of the Hitler's youth. Only there were over 10 million of them. They terrorized citizens. They confiscated guns, burned books, Bibles, and seized anything of value. They raided homes, churches, temples, and they dragged people out into the streets for public beatings. That happened in Vietnam too. People were forced to recite Mao Zedong's Little Red Book, and total obedience was unconditional. I don't know if you folks remember those old black and white newsreels of crowds of millions of Chinese waving the Little Red Book. Well, it was during that time. The Red Guards ran mock trials, turning neighbors against neighbors. Even families turned on each other, getting those deemed disloyal to Mao and the CCP or the Chinese Communist Party, sent off to retraining camps. And in countless cases, many of these people simply disappeared and were never seen or heard from again. We will never know the full extent of the massacre during this decades-long purge. It was 10 years, because no records were ever kept. And plus, there was no Third Amendment. But it has been estimated that between 60 to 80 million Chinese citizens were exterminated, erased, for daring to challenge or disagree intellectually with Mao Zedong's fundamental transformation of China. Today's left-wing woke cancel culture movement share many eerie parallels to China's Cultural Revolution. Mao Zedong's purge of China attempted to erase 5,000 years of Chinese heritage, culture, traditional values, and any freedom of religion and religious expression was strictly forbidden. His goal was to create a godless Marxist society in which the Communist Party or the CCP was in control of every aspect of people's lives. The communist occupation of China did not happen overnight, however, and my mother used to tell us that as a schoolgirl growing up in 1930s China, that they were inundated with communist propaganda about everything traditionally Chinese, and against the Nationalist Party, the party in charge at the time. My mother was, in fact, experiencing the Chinese Marxist cancel culture of the 1930s. Back then, Chinese communists led by Mao Zedong were actively engaged in subversive activities to sabotage the nationalists in power and to destroy China's democratic system of government. Yes, China was democratic. They turned peasant farmers against wealthy landowners, stoked the flame of envy and hatred, putting the working class against industrialists, and fanned the flame of hatred against intellectuals. Any of that sound familiar to you, by the way? All of this to divide the country. Grandfather, on my mother's side, was a wealthy banker in Shanghai, and so the family was targeted by these Marxist thugs even before the war began. With the advent of World War II and the Chinese invasion of China, the Japanese invasion of China, the communists saw their opportunities to strike. And with the help of Joseph Stalin's Soviet Union, they eventually succeeded, as we all know, in taking control of China, but only after a long, bloody civil war. Because of communist China's continued dominance on the world stage and their support of Marxist tyrants around the world today, countless people continue to suffer. Witness the endless suffering of the North Koreans. No one talks about that. It's amazing, isn't it? What about Venezuela? And of course, most recently playing out 90 miles south of Key West, the Cuban people's fighting for their freedom. And I don't know if folks heard here, but by the way, Black Lives Matter proclaimed their support for the Cuban regime and praised the dictators for cracking down on their own people. You can't make this stuff up. Yet, we have left-wing college professors preaching the virtues of Marxism and communism in American universities today. We even have members of Congress accusing Americans of racism and suppressing its citizens. But folks, let me ask you these questions. This is sincere. It's semi-rhetorical. But have you ever seen any Floridians brave shark-infested waters to swim across to Cuba to escape American tyranny? What about, has any Texans or Montanans snuck across the border in the dark of night to Mexico or Canada because America is so racist and oppressive? I know it's rhetorical, it's almost humorous, but it's really sad. I get frustrated when people say, communism doesn't work. No. It isn't that communism doesn't work. Of course it doesn't work. That misses the point entirely. Communism is fundamentally evil, provably. It's a cancer. It's a poison that's afflicted our world and has produced unthinkable human suffering and genocide, the likes of which that makes Hitler's Holocaust look like child's play. So, Marxism is here today in America, sadly, and we're subjected to the bullying by the Marxist woke cancel culture, Black Lives Matter, Antifa, Occupy Wall Street, Code Pink, Defund the Police, Critical Race Theory, etc., etc. I'm preaching to the choir. Everyone knows this. All of which share exactly the same sickness of the Marxist pandemic that infected 1930s China. I just never imagined that in my lifetime I'd be seeing it happen in the United States. Yet, here we are. And unless all freedom-loving Americans stand up to fight back hard against all of the many attacks on our freedoms, we will lose this country. We owe it to our future generations so they continue to have a shot at living the American dream as I have, and not to be condemned to a Marxist nightmare. Now, I had a business partner who escaped mainland China in the 60s to Hong Kong during my years when I was working. And I was amazed at hearing his story. Although his story was not uncommon, he went across the Pearl River to Hong Kong with family in tow and penniless. Today, he's a multi-millionaire industrialist. Because of hard work and because of the free society in Hong Kong, having built a magnificent manufacturing business, his story is not unique. Not for Hong Kong, and also not for Taiwan. The reason is pre-Hong Kong, pre-1997, I don't know if folks know the history of Hong Kong. Hong Kong was turned back after a 150-year lease to Great Britain in 1997 back to China, and things began to change, albeit slowly initially, but now it's accelerating. Pre-1997, Hong Kong, however, was a global mecca for free enterprise. Hong Kong was a free society, an economic powerhouse, as is with Taiwan, a beacon of hope for millions in Asia. And to me, it's amazing that today it's not even getting the coverage in the American press. Since when does the American press ignore suppression of freedom and communist tyranny? And what about the CCP's human rights abuses, such as the concentration camps for the religiously persecuted, like the Falun Gong? You don't hear about that. Instead, we just heard that the Biden administration is encouraging the United Nations to investigate the United States for racism and human rights abuses. You truly can't make this stuff up. But they just did that. Our UN ambassador just did that. The truth is, folks, not only have we lost our media, Washington, D.C. simply does not give a damn about the American people. In fact, they clearly hold contempt for the very people they have a sworn duty to serve. But all's not lost. We are Americans, and we are a resilient people. We are a fundamentally decent people, a melting pot of the best kind of human beings from all over the planet. Real Americans don't obsess about diversity because we don't dwell on our differences. Instead, we celebrate our common interests, our shared values. Our common bonds and our love of country. We take great pride in being part of the most magnificent experiment in human history called the United States of America. We are a strong people, lest anyone should forget we did defend freedom.
Thank you, sir.
And we can damn well save our country. Our Constitution provides us those tools, as Pete so eloquently explained to us all tonight. Remarkable, absolutely remarkable. We have a guidebook. We have those tools. Use it. Those tools will protect our 50 states against Washington tyranny and Washington corruption.
And we will defeat these Marxist insurgents and the anti-American zealots hell-bent on tearing us down. But act we must to stop the assault on our family values, on our American traditions, on our rule of law, on our Judeo-Christian heritage, and our liberty. I have a message for the ghost of Nikita Khrushchev, the Soviet secretary who predicted America would become communist, and to all of those domestic American-hating Marxists. Communism will never take root in America, not on our watch. Thank you.
All right, we're going to take another break to hear from our sponsors, and we'll be right back to hear from U.S. Army Colonel retired Walter Joseph Marne.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swansboro, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
Would you like to improve your overall health without the use of prescription drugs? Is stress causing you health concerns? Do you want more energy? We hope that you would like to experience optimum health the rest of your life. We offer a free nutritional consultation to the listeners of this radio program. Call the office of Gladys Sussell, wellness educator and nutritional consultant, at 252-728-2118 to make an appointment to start your journey to optimum health.
County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news. Coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers and we love our advertisers. This Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout eastern North Carolina, pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Welcome back to CCTA Wake Up Call. Well, once again, Pete Benton will be introducing retired Army Colonel, Congressional Medal of Honor receiver, Walter Joseph Marm.
Thank you, Rick. Appreciate that. The Congressional Medal of Honor is the highest honor awarded for conspicuous gallantry and bravery. This is the citation presented to our next speaker. It was presented to him. The President of the United States of America, in name of Congress, takes pleasure in presenting the Medal of Honor to First Lieutenant Infantry Walter Joseph Marm, Jr., United States Army, for conspicuous gallantry and intrepidity at the risk of life above and beyond the call of duty while serving as a platoon leader with Company A, 1st Battalion, 7th Cavalry, 1st Cavalry Division, Air Mobile, in action against enemy aggressor forces in the La Trang Valley, Republic of Vietnam, on 14 November 1965. First Lieutenant Marm's company was moving through the valley to relieve a friendly unit surrounded by an enemy force estimated at a regimental size. First Lieutenant Marm led his platoon through withering fire until they finally were forced to take cover, realizing his platoon could not hold on very long. And seeing four enemy soldiers moving up to his position, he quickly moved under heavy fire and annihilated all four. Then, seeing that his platoon receiving intense fire from a concealed machine gun, he deliberately exposed himself to draw its fire. Thus, locating its position, he attempted to destroy it with an anti-tank weapon. Although he inflicted casualties, the weapon did not silence the enemy fire. Quickly disregarding the intense fire directed at him and his platoon, he charged 50 meters across the ground and hurled grenades into the enemy position, killing some eight of the insurgents manning it. Although severely wounded, when his grenades were expended, armed with only a rifle, he continued momentum of his assault on the position and killed the remainder of the enemy. First Lieutenant Marm's selfless actions reduced the fire on his platoon, broke the enemy assault, and rallied his unit to continue toward the accomplishment of this mission. First Lieutenant Marm's gallantry on the battlefield and his extraordinary intrepidity at the risk of life are in the highest traditions of the U.S. Army and reflect great credit upon himself and the armed forces of his country. Ladies and gentlemen, Colonel Joe Marm.
Thank you, Pete. It's an honor for me to be here. I have an excuse for slurring my words. I got shot in the jaw in that battle. It kind of ruined my day. It shattered my left jaw and went out underneath my right jaw. And I always say, there but for the grace of God, another inch it would have hit my jugular vein and I'd have bled out. But so I'm very lucky and I'm honored to be here. And it's just a great privilege for me to be here. Now, you asked me how did I get to North Korea, North Carolina. My wife is a native, okay? She worked for, you ever hear of Senator Jesse Helms? She worked for Jesse Helms up in Washington, D.C. for 7 years. And then she worked for Walter Jones down here in Greenville for 24 years. And they're both very good and very powerful and great congressman and senator. When I retired, 30 years in the Army, and when I retired in 95, we moved to her hometown of Fremont, which is in Wayne County in between Wilson and Goldsboro, a town of 1,200, a very fine community. And I learned some new skills. I learned how to farm. We have any farmers here? We had, her family were heavy into farming, and so we started a hog farm with Goldsboro Milling. We had a finishing farm. You have the birthing farm, the nursery farm, and then the finishing farm. And we had 8 houses and about 6,000 hogs. And it made me appreciate farming. It's very tough work. And particularly, I did that for 8 years and then retired, and still busy, though, around Fremont, just taking care of everything. We restored her grandmother's house. Her family have been there since, before the Civil War. And anyway, right in the town of Fremont, her grandmother built a very nice old home with a tin roof, wraparound porch. You know, it's a nice old home. And so when I retired, we restored that. It's right in the city.
And it's a very special house. It requires a lot of work, though, as do most old houses. But I was born and raised in western Pennsylvania. Any of you heard of Pony League Baseball? Okay, Pony is for 13 and 14-year-olds. And they have the World Series there as, in the summer. So as a little kid, I would go to the Pony League World Series in Washington, PA. Williamsport is the home of Little League, which is 8 through 12-year-olds. Now, most people don't know what PONY stands for, P-O-N-Y, Protect Our Nation's Youth. So that's very unique, and it was a lot of fun to watch the kids play the World Series there. And they came from all over the country for the World Series. My dad was a state trooper, as Pete said. They didn't make much money back then, and he got me into shooting on a rifle, a 22 rifle on a it's called Fraser Simplex, and I did that in college. Also, I went to a college in Pittsburgh called Duquesne University, the other Duke. They had great basketball teams back in the 50s and early 60s. They're still doing pretty good today. But I shot on the rifle team at Duquesne, and the coach, the ROTC coach, said, "Marm, you're going to get drafted. Why don't you enlist and go to OCS?" And so I said, I didn't have a background. My father never served in World War II because they wouldn't let him out of the state police. So. That sounded like I had relatives that served in World War II and were wounded in combat. But so I took my first train ride from Pittsburgh down to Fort Jackson, South Carolina, got all my gear and went down to Fort Gordon. Got off of it was a bus from Fort Jackson to Fort Gordon. Got off of the bus and I asked one of the drill sergeants, "Where's the bathroom?" He ripped me up and down. He said, "Soldier, we don't have bathrooms in the Army. We have latrines." So that was my first experience with the drill sergeant. But for the I took 8 weeks of basic at Fort Gordon and 8 weeks of AIT in the Oral World War II barracks. It was pretty tough back then. We used the M1 rifle, which is a World War II rifle, in basic. In advanced individual training, we used the M14. Then in OCS, which was 6 months at Fort Benning, we carried the M16, which is a brand new rifle back then. After OCS, I went to Ranger School, which is a very, very tough course. 9 weeks of very tough patrolling in the at Fort Benning, then up in the mountains of North Georgia, then 3 weeks there, then the last 3 weeks down in the Everglades of Florida, where we did patrolling down there. And when we were in the Florida phase, they had a formation. They called out 50 names and said, "Your order's now being changed. You can make one phone call home to your wife or your parents and tell them you aren't going where you're supposed to be going." There was a new unit forming up at Fort Benning then, and we were assigned to that unit. It was the 1st Cavalry Division. They had been testing the helicopters against playing war games against the 82nd and 101st for about a year to see how effective the helicopter was going to be. And they were able to outmaneuver the ground forces of the 82nd and 101st. And so I signed in to the 1st Cav Division, and my unit was 1st Battalion, 7th Cavalry. Its lineage goes back to Custer, General George Armstrong Custer, at the Little Bighorn. Okay, the 7th Cavalry is very famous and Custer made it pretty famous. 400 helicopters and 15,000 soldiers had to get to Vietnam. We went over on merchant marine ships, all the troops, and the aircraft carriers carried the 400 helicopters to Vietnam. It took about a month. We left at Charleston, South Carolina, went through the Panama Canal up to California, then across the Pacific in the USS Maurice Rose, which is a World War II merchant marine ship. We went through a typhoon in the Pacific. I got a little seasick there. We were able to do a lot of training on the ship, and we would shoot off of the rear of the ship with our M16s on pallets that they would have tied up to the ropes and cables. So we stayed pretty busy on the ship, and it was a great unit. We landed, we left in August, got there in the middle of September, and so we were out. We had to set up our base camp in the Central Highlands of South Vietnam, and it was very, very, very tough. We had to actually just cut out the jungle, and for our helicopters and all of the troops, the 15,000 troops, and we went on patrol for. I was a second lieutenant then, fresh out of OCS, and my whole 50 of my OCS classmates were there with us, and the battle started in November. The 14th was a Sunday. The 15th and the 16th were the 3 days of the battle. We went in with about 450 troops of the 7th Cavalry, and the enemy outnumbered us. They had about 3,000. We didn't know it at the time. They had just come over the Cambodian border. We're pretty close to the Cambodian border. It's called the Battle of the Ia Drang, and that's the creek bed there, Iadrang, Ia Drang. We only had one embedded reporter, Joe Galloway, who lives in North Carolina. He's my age. I'm 79, so he was. We were about 23, 24 during the battle. We were about 23, 24 years old. And he came in the second day, and the sergeant major, we were in an intense firefight that second day, and the sergeant major, Plumley, came up to him and kicked him in the shins and said, "Sonny, you can't take any pictures down there." So that got Joe Galloway up and going. And he is the only reporter in the Army that was awarded the Bronze Star with a V. For valor, for his actions of helping to save and rescue wounded soldiers on the battlefield. But that battle on the first day, the 14th, one platoon had it was B Company, I was in A Company, had got surrounded and separated from the rest of B Company, and they had to pull back. We made two attempts that day to try to get up to them, up to that battlefield, up to and get them out of there. One of the soldiers came over to me during the battle and said, my company commander was Captain Nadal. He said, "Captain Nadal's been wounded. You're in charge." I says, "Well, just like in Ranger School, they put you in charge at a very critical time." So I went over to the command post, and their colonel, Captain Nadal, was. He wasn't wounded or killed. I missed the first word of that runner, that sergeant come over. If he gets wounded or killed, you're in charge. So it made me feel good, so I went back to my platoon and took over. We made two attempts that day to get up there. The first attempt, there was too many bad guys out there in front. We had to pull back. It was just B Company and A Company. The second attempt is when we prepped our front of us with artillery and mortar to try to soften the attack, to try to get the bad guys out of there. People, they said, "Marm, why didn't you get your troops to charge that machine gun position?" This was a solidified rock anthill. It was very hard rock with trees and shrubs all around it. When you think of Vietnam, you think of heavy jungle. This wasn't heavy jungle. It was elephant grass and it was about waist high. It wasn't. We weren't hacking our way through a thick jungle like many areas of the Vietnam terrain. I told one of my men to shoot a light anti-tank weapon. It's a one-shot bazooka into the solidified rock anthill. He tried to shoot it, but with all the humidity and wetness, it didn't go off. So rather than him, I took it from him and rearmed it by closing it up and opening it back up again and put it on my shoulder, and it went off. It made a big boom, like, and it made a big cloud of dust, and we thought we had silenced that position. So we started moving forward again. But we were still getting intense fire from all over the front, and particularly from that anthill. They were up in the trees, too, around that position. So I told one of my men, there was a lot of battle noise. So I told one of my men to take a grenade and run up there and throw it over the top of the position. And he thought I meant throw it from where we were at, which was what he did. He threw it and it landed in front. And it didn't do a lot of damage landing in front. It went off, but it didn't do a lot of damage. So rather than waste any more time, because it was starting to get, it was about about 4 o'clock in the afternoon start. We wanted to get to that platoon. And so I told my men to hold their fire, don't shoot me up. And I ran across about 50 meters of terrain and got to the bunker and threw it over the top. And it went off, and I went around to the left side and was able to shoot some more enemy soldiers that were trying to shoot me. And then somewhere in the background, someone shot me. A lot of the wounds were upper body wounds because of the elephant grass. But that's when I got shot in the jaw, and was evacuated. I was a walking wounded, and a couple of the my troops helped me get back to the. Command post, where we were eventually evacuated. The two helicopter pilots that were in the battle, Bruce Crandall and Ed Freeman, were awarded the Medal of Honor later. And it's the only battle in Vietnam where there were three Medal of Honors in one battle. So that's very unique. And the battle lasted two more days, okay? The 15th and the 16th. We had tremendous support from the Air Force, the Navy, and the Marine Corps fast mover. The jets came in and provided tremendous. So it was a total team effort. Plus, we had a lot more assets than the enemy had, too. We got reinforcements with the helicopters. And so that was very important to get those out of there. And we were able to silence the enemy after 3 days of intense fighting. Joe Galloway, the only embedded reporter, and the battalion commander, Hal Moore, wrote a book about it. It was published in 1992 called We Were Soldiers Once and Young. 10 years later, they made a movie about it, and they had to cut it down to fit on the marquee to We Were Soldiers. It's one of the better Vietnam movies that I have seen, starring Mel Gibson and Sam Elliott. Sam Elliott made the movie. He played the sergeant major with some of his one-liners. He was very, very good. It's a very good movie. The man that's on the cover of the book is an OCS classmate of mine named Rick Wiscola. And he's what America is all about. He served in the British Army in South Africa. Came to America, joined our army, went to OCS with us, and served in our unit. He was in the sister battalion, second of the seven, and earned the Silver Star for his actions in the battle. Got out, became a citizen, went to college on the GI Bill, went to law school, and he worked his way up corporate America. He was head of security in the South Tower for Morgan Stanley. The North Tower, this is 2011. The North Tower got hit first. He had been practicing fire drills with these corporate executives and stockbrokers with Morgan Stanley. And they didn't want to leave their positions, the 7 years prior to that on these fire drills. But on 9/11, he told everybody to exit the building. He said everything. It came on the intercom. Everything is okay. Stay in place. He said, "BS. We're getting out of here." And ordered all of the employees out of the South Tower. He's credited with saving 2,700 lives of Morgan Stanley employees. And like a good leader, he went to back in to make sure the building was cleared, and it came down, and his body was never recovered. President, in our OCS class, tried to get the Presidential Medal of Freedom for him, and President Trump awarded his wife, Sue Ritzkohl, the Presidential Citizens Medal, which is right under the Presidential Medal of Freedom, you know, about 3 or 4 years ago. And so we were able to attend that very nice service. But I wear the medal for all the brave men that I served with, you know. Thank you. From the Vietnam War, there were 262 Medals of Honor awarded, 100 living and 162 posthumous, which means their family received the medal for them. Usually the president gives you the medal. There's only two living recipients, myself and a Marine named Barney Barnum, that didn't get the medal. Living recipients that didn't get the medal from the president. It was during President Johnson's term in office, and he wanted to keep Vietnam a low profile. So he had the Secretary of the Army give me my medal, present me my medal, and the Secretary of the Navy gave Barney Barnum his medal a few months later. I was very early. I was like the seventh recipient of 262. A very cold December day. It was an outside ceremony on the outside the river entrance of the Pentagon. It was a very, very, very nice ceremony. I was able to troop the line with the old guard was there. There was a 19-gun salute. Many generals fell out from the Pentagon. More people could be there at an outside ceremony than in the White House. So that was very nice. And it was just I was shaking in my boots, not from the cold, but being around so many VIPs as I was a first lieutenant NP. And it was a very, very moving ceremony. But there's a book out that's in most middle schools and high school libraries called, it's about, there's 150 Medals of Honor Medal of Honor recipients in this book. The center medal is the Air Force medal. They didn't have the Air Force medal until Vietnam. Okay, in World War One and World War II, it was the Army Air Corps. Okay, so they would receive the Army medal, and then the Navy medal, and the Marine Corps medals on here, and the Army medals on the other side. This is a great book, and it's a pretty good read. There's been about 33 North Carolinians who have received the medal. One from World War One named Cy Parker, who's from Concord. He was in the Battle of Cattigny, and he was one of the highly decorated recipients. He received the Medal of Honor, the second highest award, the Distinguished Service Cross. The two Silver Stars and three Purple Hearts. And Jack Lucas is another famous, he's a Marine from on Iwo Jima, World War II. Pretty famous guy. He was from Plymouth, North Carolina. He was a big guy for his age, so he wanted to join the Marines, and he did, and he forged his mother's signature. He didn't want his mother to lie for him that he was of age to join. So he joined the Marines. He was stationed in Hawaii, and there was a ship going overseas to the war, and he hopped on the ship, and he was on Iwo Jima. He jumped on two grenades, and one was a dud, and one went off. And you know, the medics thought he was dead, but he had a lot of injuries. But he, after 26 operations, he survived and lived. and went back home and received the medal from President Truman, who one of President Truman's famous quotes is, "I'd rather have that medal than be president." Okay, but Jack Lucas was one of the youngest recipients at 17 to earn the medal. Okay, there's been one lady received the medal, Mary Walker from the Civil War. She was a surgeon in a Ohio regiment, and they didn't want a female in the Civil War, but she volunteered, and she was awarded the Medal of Honor. They did a relook, and they took it away from her, but she refused to give it up, and she wore it for the last 2 years before she passed. We're a cross section. We've had 3,500 total recipients, 1,500 in the Civil War, because that was the only medal they had in the Civil War. Okay? And we've had in all the other wars, you know, that very, very special. Now our headquarters is located down. The Medal of Honor headquarters is located on USS Yorktown in Charleston. It's a great place to visit, and they have some very unique things there on the Yorktown. We've had 9 chaplains receive the medal, 4 from the Civil War, 1 from World War II, 1 from Korea, and 3 from Vietnam. And I told someone tonight that the last 5 from World War II, Korea, and the 3 from Vietnam are Catholic chaplains. The 4 from the Civil War are Protestant chaplains. And 2 of the Catholic chaplains in the Catholic Church are being elevated to sainthood. The one from Korea, they just found some of his remains about 4 or 5 months ago, Father Chaplain Kapan. He stayed with he was in my unit, the cavalry, the 1st Cavalry Division, and stayed with the wounded when they were being overrun in the Korean War, and was a POW in one of the prison camps in Korea, and would steal food to give to his fellow POWs. And he died there in from pneumonia in the POW camp. And the other, Capadonna, is from Long Island and was a Navy chaplain in Vietnam, and covered the body of a wounded Marine and received and was killed, and had a lot of shrapnel and bullet wounds in his body, and both of those are being elevated to sainthood in the Catholic Church. It takes a long time, though. Now, I just want to, you know, I wear, like I said, the medal for all the brave men and women, and that's about all I have to say. It's a good book and a good movie if you like military history. So thank you for having me.
Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair is the transmission physician in the New Bern area. If you're experiencing transmission problems, call Charles Grover at 252-637-2399 or stop by the shop on 17 South in New Bern. Torque can install a new or reconditioned transmission, or they can rebuild your transmission if that's what you prefer. See Torque for a variety of minor automotive repairs like brakes, tune-ups, and water pump. You can count on Torque Transmission and Automotive Repair.
Hey folks, here's a tip. When you think firearms and ammo, think E70 Palm. They built on Highway 70 east of New Bern across from the fairgrounds for 31 years. Drew Preston and his staff know firearms. Gun sales have tripled in under a year, and women shooters are the fastest growing part of their business. Their great inventory, over 300 guns in stock, changes daily. And if you want something they don't have, they'll look for it. New and used, rifles, shotguns, and pistols, buy, sell, or trade. And they also have many holsters, scopes, and other gun accessories. Every member of the staff is deeply knowledgeable, and every one of them is an excellent shooter. So don't just come for the inventory. Come for the thoughtful advice. E70 Palm, your home for firearms, ammo, and answers. Highway 70 East, New Bern, across from the fairgrounds.
For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
Moore's Old Time Barbecue is slow cooked and smoked over hickory in the tradition of the Moore's family for over 70 years. Moore's also serves fried chicken, cooked to order seafood, and homemade side dishes. Open 7 days a week in New Bern, Winterville, Moorhead City, Swanspur, and Jacksonville. Moore's will cater and deliver anywhere you want your truly traditional barbecue and fixings delivered. And remember, if it's not Moore's, it's less.
You know how you feel when your hair looks great? Why not have that feeling regularly? You can if you let Kristen Toller be your secret weapon. Kristen is one half of the dynamic duo at Creative Hair by Patsy. They cut hair for both men and women, and they understand that one style does not fit all. Each person has some styles that look great, while others would be not so great. And as for the question to color or not to color, only you can answer that. But if you decide you want the lift a bit of color can add, you're in good hands with Kristen. She's great with color. So go ahead, give Kristen a call at 252-636-5741 and book an appointment. That's 636-5741. You know you want to do it.
Well, folks, that's all the time we have for today's show. I hope you enjoyed our guest speakers, and please come out and join us at one of our public meetings. We have events like this the third Tuesday of every month, and we always bring in some exciting speakers, and I think you'll enjoy meeting the folks from CCTA. Visit our website, cctaxpayers.com. There you'll get more information about CCTA, and you'll get the notices and listings of our next public meeting and who our speakers will be. And we look forward to seeing you there and hope you will bring some friends and family when you come to visit us at cctaxpayers.com.
People who learn to do something well and do it often get very good at it. Dr. Jay Singleton and his staff spend a lot of time removing cataracts, and they are good at it. Dr. Singleton has been doing a high volume of these procedures for 15 years. Let's face it, once we turn 50, the chances are we'll soon need cataract surgery. Fortunately, the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern, and the state-of-the-art Singleton Surgery Center is bringing costs down for patients and participating insurance companies. For dedication, experience, and convenience, you can trust the Singleton team. Dr. J. Singleton and the Singleton Vision Center is conveniently located at 3515 Trent Road in New Bern.
Would you like to improve your overall health without the use of prescription drugs? Is stress causing you health concerns? Do you want more energy? We hope that you would like to experience optimum health the rest of your life. We offer a free nutritional consultation to the listeners of this radio program. Call the office of Gladys Sussell, wellness educator and nutritional consultant, at 252-728-2118 to make an appointment to start your journey to optimum health.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern. For news, commentary, and a different perspective, check out rightwinggranny.com. Hey, Granny's got it going on. See for yourself. Go to rightwinggranny.com.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.